Chapter 151. The plots begin to fail, and doubts and dangers, to disturb the plotter. Ralph sat alone, in the solitary room, where he was accustomed to take his meals, and to sit of nights, when no profitable occupation called him abroad. Before him was an untasted breakfast, and near to where his fingers beat restlessly upon the table, lay his watch. It was long past the time at which, for many years, he had put it in his pocket, and gone with measured steps downstairs to the business of the day, but he took as little heed of its monotonous warning, as of the meat and drink before him, and remained with his head resting on one hand, and his eyes fixed moodily on the ground. This departure from his regular and constant habit, in one so regular and unvarying in all that appertained to the daily pursuit of riches, would almost of itself have told that the usurer was not well, that he labored under some mental or bodily indisposition, and that it was one of no slight kind so, to affect a man like him, was sufficiently shown by his haggard face, jaded air, and hollow languid eyes. Which he raised at last with a start, and a hasty glance around him, as one who suddenly awakes from sleep, and cannot immediately recognize the place in which he finds himself. "What is this," apostrophe he said, "that hangs over me, and I cannot shake off? I have never pampered myself, and should not be ill. I have never moped, and pined, and yielded to fancies, but what can a man do without rest?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he pressed his hand upon his forehead. "Night after night comes and goes, and I have no rest. If I sleep, what rest is that which is disturbed by constant dreams of the same detested faces crowding round me of the same detested people, in every variety of action, mingling with all I say and do, and always to my defeat? Waking, what rest have I? Constantly haunted by this heavy shadow of I know not what, which is its worst character? I must have rest. One night's unbroken rest, and I should be a man again." Apostrophe, pushing the table from him while he spoke, as though he loathed the sight of food, he encountered the watch, the hands of which were almost upon noon. "This is strange." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, "noon, and Nog's not here. What drunken brawl keeps him away? I would give something now, something in money, even after that dreadful loss, if he had stabbed a man in a tavern scuffle, or broken into a house, or picked a pocket, or done anything that would send him abroad with an iron ring upon his leg, and rid me of him. Better still, if I could throw temptation in his way, and lure him on to rob me. He should be welcome to what he took, so I brought the law upon him. For he is a traitor, I swear. How, or when, or where, I don't know, though I suspect." Apostrophe, after waiting for another half hour, he dispatched the woman who kept his house to Newman's lodging, to inquire if he were ill, and why he had not come or sent. She brought back answer, that he had not been home all night, and that no one could tell her anything about him. "But there is a gentleman, sir," apostrophe she said, "below, who was standing at the door when I came in, and he says apostrophe, what says he?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Ralph, turning angrily upon her. "I told you I would see nobody. Apostrophe, he says, apostrophe," replied the woman, abashed by his harshness, "that he comes on very particular business which admits of no excuse. And I thought perhaps it might be about apostrophe, about what, in the devil's name?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ralph. "You spy and speculate on people's business with me, do you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, dear, no, sir. "I saw you were anxious, and thought it might be about Mr. Knox, that's all." Apostrophe, saw I was anxious. Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered Ralph. "They all watch me now. Where is this person? You did not say I was not down yet, I hope?" Apostrophe, the woman replied, that he was in the little office, and that she had said her master was engaged, but she would take the message. "Well," apostrophe said Ralph, "I'll see him. Go you to your kitchen, and keep there. Do you mind me?" Apostrophe, glad to be released, the woman quickly disappeared. Collecting himself, and assuming as much of his accustomed manner as his utmost resolution could summon, Ralph descended the stairs. After pausing for a few moments, with his hand upon the lock, he entered Newman's room, and confronted Mr. Charles Cheeryble. Of all men alive, this was one of the last he would have wished to meet at any time. But, now that he recognized, in him only the patron and protector of Nicholas, he would rather have seen a specter. One beneficial effect, however, the encounter had upon him. It instantly roused all his dormant energies, rekindled in his breast the passions that, for many years, had found an improving home there, called up all his wrath, hatred, and malice, restored the sneer to his lip, and the scowl to his brow, and made him again, in all outward appearance, the same Ralph Nickleby whom so many had bitter cause to remember. "Humph!" said Ralph, pausing at the door. "This is an unexpected favor, sir." "And an unwelcome one," said Brother Charles. "An unwelcome one, I know." "Men say you are truth itself, sir," replied Ralph. "You speak truth now, at all events, and I'll not contradict you. The favor is, at least, as unwelcome as it is unexpected. I can scarcely say more." "Plainly, sir," began Brother Charles. "Plainly, sir," interrupted Ralph, "I wish this conference to be a short one, and to end where it begins. I guess the subject upon which you are about to speak, and I'll not hear you. You like plainness, I believe. There it is. Here is the door as you see. Our way lies in very different directions. Take yours, I beg of you, and leave me to pursue mine in quiet." Repeated Brother Charles mildly, and looking at him with more of pity than reproach. "To pursue his way in quiet. You will scarcely remain in my house, I presume, sir, against my will," said Ralph, "or you can scarcely hope to make an impression upon a man who closes his ears to all that you can say, and is firmly and resolutely determined not to hear you." "Mr. Nickleby, sir," returned Brother Charles, no less mildly than before, but firmly too. "I come here against my will, sorely and grievously against my will. I have never been in this house before, and, to speak my mind, sir, I don't feel at home or easy in it, and have no wish ever to be here again. You do not guess the subject on which I come to speak to you, you do not indeed. I am sure of that, or your manner would be a very different one." Ralph glanced keenly at him, but the clear eye and open countenance of the honest old merchant underwent no change of expression, and met his look without reserve. "Shall I go on?" said Mr. Cheeryble. "Oh, by all means, if you please," returned Ralph dryly. "Here are walls to speak to, sir, a desk, and two stools. Most attentive auditors, and certain not to interrupt you. Go on, I beg. Make my house yours, and perhaps by the time I return from my walk, you will have finished what you have to say, and will yield me up possession again." So saying, he buttoned his coat, and turning into the passage, took down his hat. The old gentleman followed, and was about to speak, when Ralph waved him off impatiently, and said, "Not a word. I tell you, sir, not a word. Virtuous as you are not an angel yet, to appear in men's houses, whether they will or no, and pour your speech into unwilling ears. Preach to the walls, I tell you, not to me. I am no angel, heaven knows," returned Brother Charles, shaking his head, "but an erring and imperfect man. Nevertheless, there is one quality which all men have, in common with the angels, blessed opportunities of exercising, if they will, mercy. It is an errand of mercy that brings me here. Pray let me discharge it." "I show no mercy," retorted Ralph with a triumphant smile, "and I ask none. Seek no mercy from me, sir, in behalf of the fellow who has imposed upon your childish credulity, but let him expect the worst that I can do. Apostrophe, he asked mercy at your hands. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the old merchant warmly. Ask it at his, sir, ask it at his. If you will not hear me now, when you may, hear me when you must, or anticipate what I would say, and take measures to prevent our ever meeting again. Your nephew is a noble lad, sir, an honest, noble lad. What you are, Mr. Nickleby, I will not say, but what you have done, I know. Now, sir, when you go about the business in which you have been recently engaged, and find it difficult of pursuing, come to me, and my brother Ned, and Tim Linkinwater, sir, and we'll explain it for you and come soon, or it may be too late, and you may have it explained with a little more roughness, and a little less delicacy, and never forget, sir, that I came here this morning, in mercy to you, and am still ready to talk to you in the same spirit. Apostrophe, with these words, uttered with great emphasis and emotion, Brother Charles put on his broad-brimmed hat, and, passing Ralph Nickleby without any other remark, trotted nimbly into the street. Ralph looked after him, but neither moved, nor spoke for some time. When he broke what almost seemed the silence of stupefaction, by a scornful laugh, this, apostrophe, he said, from its wildness, should be another of those dreams that have so broken my rest of late. In mercy to me. Foe. The old simpleton has gone mad. Apostrophe, although he expressed himself in this derisive and contemptuous manner, it was plain that, the more Ralph pondered, the more ill at ease he became, and the more he labored under some vague anxiety and alarm, which increased as the time passed on, and no tidings of Newman Noggs arrived. After waiting until late in the afternoon, tortured by various apprehensions and misgivings, and the recollection of the warning which his nephew had given him when they last met, the further confirmation of which now presented itself in one shape of probability, now in another, and haunted him perpetually. He left home, and, scarcely knowing why, save that he was in a suspicious and agitated mood, betook himself to Snawley's house. His wife presented herself, and, of her, Ralph inquired whether her husband was at home. No, apostrophe, she said sharply, he is not indeed, and I don't think he will be at home for a very long time, that's more. Apostrophe, do you know who I am? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Ralph. Oh yes, I know you very well. Too well, perhaps, and perhaps he does too, and sorry am I, that I should have to say it. Apostrophe, tell him, that I saw him through the window blind above, as I crossed the road just now, and that I would speak to him on business, apostrophe, said Ralph. Do you hear? Apostrophe, I hear, apostrophe, rejoined Mrs. Snawley, taking no further notice of the request. I knew this woman was a hypocrite, in the way of psalms and scripture phrases, apostrophe, said Ralph, passing quietly by, but I never knew she drank before. Apostrophe, stop. You don't come in here, apostrophe, said Mr. Snawley's better half, interposing her person, which was a robust one, in the doorway. You have said more than enough to him on business, before now. I always told him what dealing with you, and working out your schemes would come to. It was either you or the schoolmaster, one of you, or the two between you that got the forged letter done. Remember that. That wasn't his doing, so don't lay it at his door. Apostrophe, hold your tongue, you Jezebel, apostrophe, said Ralph, looking fearfully round. Ah, I know when to hold my tongue, and when to speak, Mr. Nickleby, apostrophe, retorted the dame. Take care that other people know when to hold theirs. Apostrophe, you jade, apostrophe, said Ralph, if your husband has been idiot enough to trust you with his secrets, keep them, she devil that you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not so much his secrets as other people's secrets, perhaps, apostrophe, retorted the woman, not so much his secrets as yours. None of your black looks at me. You'll want them all, perhaps, for another time. You had better keep them. Apostrophe, will you, apostrophe, said Ralph, suppressing his passion as well as he could, and clutching her tightly by the wrist. Will you go to your husband, and tell him that I know he is at home, and that I must see him? And will you tell me what it is that you and he mean by this new style of behavior? No, replied the woman, violently disengaging herself. I'll do neither. You set me at defiance, do you? Said Ralph. Yes, was the answer. I do. For an instant Ralph had his hand raised, as though he were about to strike her, but, checking himself, and nodding his head and muttering, as though to assure her he would not forget this, walked away. Thence, he went straight to the inn which Mr. Squeers frequented, and inquired when he had been there last, in the vague hope that, successful or unsuccessful, he might, by this time, have returned from his mission, and be able to assure him that all was safe. But Mr. Squeers had not been there for 10 days, and all that the people could tell about him was, that he had left his luggage and his bill. Disturbed by 1,000 fears and surmises, and bent upon ascertaining whether Squeers had any suspicion of Snolly, or was, in any way, a party to this altered behavior, Ralph determined to hazard the extreme step of inquiring for him at the Lammeth lodging, and having an interview with him even there. Bent upon this purpose, and in that mood in which delay is insupportable, he repaired at once to the place, and being, by description, perfectly acquainted with the situation of his room, crept upstairs and knocked gently at the door. Not one, nor two, nor three, nor yet a dozen knocks, served to convince Ralph, against his wish, that there was nobody inside. He reasoned that he might be asleep, and, listening, almost persuaded himself that he could hear him breathe. Even when he was satisfied that he could not be there, he sat patiently on a broken stair and waited, arguing that he had gone out upon some slight errand, and must soon return. Many feet came up the creaking stairs, and the step of some seemed to his listening ear so like that of the man for whom he waited, that Ralph often stood up to be ready to address him when he reached the top. But, one by one, each person turned off into some room. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.